While Obama visits Cuba and gets the star treatment, having just made a deal with Iran where he handed back $150 billion to what experts consider the world's worst terrorist sponsor. So we must now ask, why does Obama make deals with America's worst enemies and demand nothing in return? And now he's even visiting them. Sadly, the human rights violations... Sadly, the human rights violations that made Cuba infamous, including the detention, torture, and executions of people for simply criticizing the government, go on unabated. Likewise, the number of those executed in Iran leapt immediately after the new deal was signed, which begs the question, does Obama really have no game when it comes to negotiations? Or is he engaging in what many Americans have long suspected or believe? Passive-aggressive behavior meant to damage U.S. standing in the world and weakening us at home as well. Meanwhile, his admission to the U.S. of various persons of questionable background and terrible records, like hundreds of thousands of illegal felons from down south who are allowed to stay and then have done hundreds of murders as well as many other crimes, as well as just as many Middle Eastern persons from jihad zones, lays Obama open to the claim he doesn't care in the least for individual Americans. Instead, he's all in 24/7, 365 for change that will massively and ruinously deform the states as we know them, and the sooner the better. But now we see an enormous backlash that has mushroomed into the 2016 presidential race, with a seemingly inchoate yet utterly viscerally understandable logic. Average, everyday, normal Americans are infuriated with Barack's casual handling or handing away of our culture, values, military advantage, reputation, wealth, and safety. Further, the average American is sickened by Obama's smug dismissal of the people and his self-infatuated standard that everything he's ever done in office is beyond criticism. In other words, people are now looking for a pro-American, pardon the French, badass, to right some wrongs, even the score, turn some of our swag, and more than anything, fight back. Can the new kid in town do everything he claims? Maybe not, but at least we know he'll try. Stay tuned, sports fans. Well, it's 6:09 and good morning. An opening salvo against this trip to Cuba. And I've got that story for you. I've also got the Arizona protests and vote, where the protesters went to the Trump rallies and tried to stop them from driving into the rally. They put cars across the street. They chained themselves to cars. And we've got a vote tomorrow in Arizona, believe it or not. And there's, I think, something like 47 delegates over there, maybe a little bit more. We'll talk about the stopping Trump, Hillary's emails, and a very weird Beck speech. And now I've got coming up, I think on Thursday, I've got an analysis of something that Kathy brought up, which was the idea behind the colonialists when they came to America. And I want to get into that a little bit. So a little bit of religion, a little bit of history. Now, I've got a clip for you here. Obama arrives in Cuba. Check it out. On the Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces 1450. Air Force One waving to everybody. All right. right, he's walking down the plane. So anyway, I do have a little analysis from PBS NewsHour. Check it out.
On March 21st, President Obama will make Cuba the first stop on a trip to Latin America. It will be an historic moment that comes 14 months after Cuba and the United States announced renewed diplomatic ties. Our chief foreign affairs correspondent, Margaret Warner, begins our coverage.
It will be the first visit to Cuba by a sitting American president since Calvin Coolidge in 1928. President Obama announced the plans on his official Twitter feed today. And Deputy National Security Advisor Ben Rhodes outlined the goals.
We see it as a means of pushing forward this normalization process, trying to achieve a greater opening between the United States and Cuba commercially, but also supporting and advancing the values that we care about.
The visit, including talks with Cuban leader Raul Castro, follows more than a year of work to thaw relations. Embassies reopened in both countries, and the two nations this week agreed to start daily commercial flights. But these moves toward normalization haven't produced results as quickly as hoped. Commerce Secretary Penny Pritzker, meeting Cuba's trade minister in Washington this week, complained that despite Washington easing restrictions on U.S. companies wanting to do business there, Havana hasn't done the same. Rhodes echoed that today.
What we would like to see is that, you know, they are taking the types of steps that allow those regulatory changes to take hold, that allow U.S. businesses to start to be able to operate in Cuba in ways that benefit the Cuban people.
Cuba argues the U.S. is to blame for lack of progress, as a top Cuban official underscored today.
Of course, to achieve full reestablishment of those bilateral relations, outstanding issues would have to be resolved, including the lift of the embargo and the return to Cuba of the territory occupied by a naval base in Guantanamo.
Congress is refusing to lift the trade embargo, and the White House said today the U.S. position on retaining Guantanamo has not changed. Human rights also remains a point of contention. Rhodes said today that Mr. Obama will meet with civil society activists during his visit, but leading Republicans urged him not to go at all. Presidential candidate Marco Rubio, son of Cuban immigrants, spoke in a CNN town hall last night.
There's no elections in Cuba. There's no choice in Cuba. And so my whole problem, I want the relationship between the U.S. and Cuba to change, but it has to be reciprocal. And so today, a year and 2 months after the opening to Cuba, the Cuban government remains as repressive as ever.
Even so, the White House said lawmakers from both parties will accompany the president. For the PBS NewsHour, I'm Margaret Warner.
We explore the historical significance now with William Leo Grand. He's a specialist in Latin America at American University. He's written a number of books on U.S.-Cuban relations. And welcome back to the NewsHour, Bill Leo Grand. Good
Thank
to see you.
Good to be here.
How
with
big a deal is this visit by the president next month?
Well, I think it's historic. And I think as we look back on it, we'll see that it's as significant as Richard Nixon's 1972 trip to China, which was really the symbolic break in the old policy and a new policy of engagement with China. In the same way, this trip by President Obama is symbolic of the fundamental shift that he made in U.S.-Cuba policy back in December 2014.
Well, what real changes do you see? We know, as Margaret just reported, that the embargo, the trade embargo, still exists. There's, what, any sign Congress is ready to look at that again?
Well, not this year, because we're in the middle of an election year. But next year, there's a real opportunity to revisit it. There are a lot of Republicans who are pro-business and whose constituents would like to be able to gain access to the Cuban market. And I think that, and there are a lot of Democrats, of course, who've been in favor of a new policy toward Cuba for a long time. And I think there's the makings of a coalition.
All right. So anyway, this kind of reminds me of the situation with China. It's funny this guy brought it up because of the fact that, you know, we're doing business with China, and probably in some ways the foundation is laid for that type of relationship. Just because you do trade with a country doesn't mean that they're going to change their position on human rights. And if you look at what's going on in China, there's no freedom of speech. I mean, there's freedoms in the Constitution in China. but they're not lived out. There's no freedom of the press. Freedom House ranks China as not having a free press. Freedom of movement is not. So anyway, you've got all of these freedoms, religious freedom that doesn't exist in China. And political freedom and all this stuff. So you've got, you know, this one child policy where if you think there's freedom in China, you can't have two children. They go to if they find out that you've had a kid, they will go to your house and, you know, force the wife or the woman to have an abortion, or they will take the kid. And there's many, many stories out there of them taking children and just killing the children. So life is not held precious there. So if you think about it, there is no reason with all the power that we have that we couldn't have made a deal. It just seems like this president is absolutely allergic to making deals with country that benefit America. He wants to go in and unilaterally end embargoes and stuff like that, like we did with Iran and Cuba. At the same time, he's going to, you know, he's going to come in and he says, of course, change will come. Well, has change come to China? China has become the second most powerful economy in the world, and we argue that trade always brings an increase improvement in human rights. But where's that improvement in China, you know? And so what motivation does Cuba now have to change? I mean, do they want our money? Of course, but they're not going to leave communism. All right, I've got a little clip here in honor of the Cuban visit this week, Buena Vista Social Club at Carnegie Hall. 618, you're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. Don't have the text line with me. I'll bring it tomorrow, but check this out. Great music. All right, so Obama is in Cuba right now, and if you had lived in Miami when I did and just heard the stories and got to know some of the Cuban people, a very beautiful people, very noble and patriotic, and you just heard the stories about the individual that's the best, most principled people in Cuba, regularly taken and arrested and forced to live in the little tiny wooden boxes with just a hole cut in the floor to use for bathroom, and people that just they're given rotten food to eat, they're tortured for years just because they criticize the government. That's the group that we went up to and just unilaterally normalized relations with. And this is the most troubling thing about this president, I think, is that he does things without any thought, or most people who really study this stuff thinks that he does this on purpose to break the American spirit, to prove to people there's no difference between communism and capitalism, democracy and tyranny, and that he is he's above it all. He's a colossus. He's an Alexander the Great. He comes in. He's a Napoleon. He makes just decisions that are world changing. And when you look at it, it's laughable because he goes to our worst enemies, people that we've not only been in opposition to, but have had other countries join us in opposition. We've argued, we've twisted arms. We've encouraged other countries to help us isolate them because they're so bad. And then we go up and we just get rid of those, you know, we just cancel those. So I mean, Obama's doing great harm to this country, you know? I don't know what else to say. This is my opinion, but 523-1450. Please call in if you love Obama, Frankie or whatever. All right, so here's a little bit from his historic Cuba speech.
Good afternoon. Today, the United States of America is changing its relationship with the people of Cuba. In the most significant changes in our policy in more than 50 years, we will end an outdated approach that for decades has failed to advance our interests, and instead, we will begin to normalize relations between our two countries. Through these changes, we intend to create more opportunities for the American and Cuban people and begin a new chapter among the nations of the Americas.
All right, so I can't take any more, but that is from 2014, December 17th. So that's about a year and a half ago, I guess. But, you know, one of the questions that I have for you is, what is America going to be like after Obama? And I was thinking, you know, Obama gets away with a lot of this talking down to people, looking down at people, laughing in people's faces. What is he going to be like once he doesn't have the power of the state behind him? We have a phone call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hi, Kelly. This is Sharon.
Good morning, Sharon. How are you? And what's on your mind?
Good morning. As I listened to that first clip that you played, the long one there, the Secretary of Commerce made this statement that she was disappointed, whatever. And the Cuban person came back and said, well, basically, you haven't met our demands yet. You still have Guantanamo. And I thought, well, there's your answer right there. He has sworn, you know, in blood, sacred oath, whatever it is, to get rid of Guantanamo, to close it. Well, there's his way. He can't do it through Congress. So he's going to, before he leaves, he's going to give it back to Cuba. What do you think?
How about
that we can have normal relations.
How about Guantanamo as a tax-free zone, like on, you know, when you're on the ship and or you're in the airport and you can just go buy stuff there tax-free?
How about our new a safe zone like our new colleges have, or our colleges have?
Like what?
Like our at the universities now.
What
are? Safe zone.
Safe zone. Oh, yeah, they can go there.
Safe zone.
People that are being tortured can run into Guantanamo Bay and get a quick waterboarding, I guess.
I don't know. Whatever. That's just my little.
That's a good point.
That came across my mind.
That's a good point. Thank you. Have a good day.
Uh-huh.
All right, folks. What can I say here? If you had lived in Southern Florida and felt the passion of the people. And just to know how frustrated they are. It's one thing to make a deal. It's another thing to make a deal on nothing. And this is what this guy, he specializes in, making deals in which we gain nothing. We make concessions, you know, $150 billion to Iran. Here you go. No human rights concessions whatsoever. This is either just a total disastrous approach to foreign relations, or it's designed. Most people at this point believe that, you know, the guy's got the world's best advisors. It can't be on accident that he continues, you know, it's over and over and over again. I mean, my God, it's just so frustrating. And so a lot of people feel like, you know what, if you're doing propaganda, one of the things that you want to do is give people the sense that that their view of reality is fictitious, right? And so when you're making decisions, if you don't include opinion of the individuals that you're supposedly representing, and don't forget, this is representative government, you can buy into this idea that we're led by the world's greatest geniuses, but ultimately that's not the form of government we have. The form of government that we have is representative. It is popular sovereignty. The will of the people is supposed to take part in the decision making, and it doesn't regularly doesn't with this guy. So you have to understand that there's a level of propagandizing that there's a level of insight into how people you know, make decisions or are influenced. And one of the things if you're really into this type of thing, you want to break people's hearts, you want to disenfranchise them, you want to show them that their opinion is not just not going to be part of the calculation, but it's actually a garbage opinion, so that you learn to shut up and sit down and go back to the corner. So that's, in my opinion, what this has been 7 years of that. So anyway, here is a little more Cuban music. And this guy, he's a great American guitar player, put this thing together. And I think they won a Grammy and everything, but I remember his name. But anyway, we'll come back and talk. We'll shift gears and talk a little bit about Arizona and the protests there and the upcoming election there. We'll be right back. And this is Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450 to call in. It's 6:34. It's 6:34, and your president is representing you in Havana, Cuba. What do you think of that? All right, so we've got a push into Arizona and Utah. In Utah, Ted Cruz is way up. In Arizona, it looks like Trump is up. And one of the things they were talking about, I've got a little segment for you on the anti-Trump push and what it looks like right now. And they're saying that by this point, about half of the votes are already cast. So it's, if Trump had an early lead, it would be almost impossible to overcome that. And he's up in the numbers anyway in the polling. But it looks like Cruz could take Utah quite easily. Check this out from Fox News.
Donald Trump is setting his sights on his last two challengers with big votes in Utah and Arizona set tomorrow. Kristen Fisher is live for us in Washington, D.C. with the latest. Kristen, good morning.
Good morning, Abby. Well, after tomorrow, it'll be almost a month before the next Republican primary or caucus. So what happens in Arizona and Utah is important, not just because of delegates, but because of the perception game. Whoever wins is going to get to talk about it over and over in the media without a new contest to kind of come about and then reshape the narrative. as the race stands right now in Utah, it appears Ted Cruz has the advantage. A new poll from Y2 Analytics released on Saturday gives Cruz a 24-point lead. He's at 53%. Kasich is at 29%. Trump, 11%. Remember, on Friday, one of Utah's most favorite and famous sons, Mitt Romney, said that he will vote for Ted Cruz in tomorrow's caucus. A week earlier, he was campaigning alongside John Kasich in Ohio, but now Romney's siding with Cruz simply because he believes that's the best way to stop Trump.
If we nominate Donald Trump, Hillary wins. If you don't want to see Hillary Clinton as the president, then I ask every one of you to come out Tuesday and vote for me 10 times.
Well, over the weekend, a group of protesters did almost stop Trump from attending a rally in Arizona. They stopped their cars on the main road to the event, refusing to allow anyone to pass. Finally, people were able to break through. Trump did eventually make it there. He held two rallies in that state over the weekend before flying back to Florida for the Palm Beach County Lincoln Day dinner last night.
Now I'm down to two leftovers. I have two leftovers. I have Lion Ted. And I have John, okay? You have to beat your enemy, right? Don't you have to? I will be the most presidential president this country has ever had, except for Honest Abe Lincoln. I cannot beat him. He was so, boom. I refuse to wear the hat.
Now, today, Trump will actually be here in Washington. He'll be speaking at AIPAC, the pro-Israel group. He'll also be meeting with nearly two dozen big-time Republicans, a clear sign that he's at least trying to improve relations with the GOP establishment.
Well, the fact of the matter is that Trump is actually has a lot of connections to people before he went into politics. So he knows a lot of these people already. The idea that he's totally cut off and disenfranchised from the party is not true. They just don't want somebody in there, number one, that they can't control. Number two, that's a loose cannon. And number three, that is not predictably at least somewhat conservative on some of these issues. And I mean, you know, you've seen the way that Donald Trump speaks. He just seems to come up with stuff off the top of his head. Oftentimes it's brilliant, but if you're making policy and you're a conservative, you want to know that someone's going to back that up. Now, recall though, we haven't had conservatives in office for decades. So this idea that the party now has to either kill Trump or kill itself is absolutely ludicrous. Where is this beautiful conservatism that you guys are supposedly fighting for? You don't practice it yourselves, but you want Trump to do it. You want to kill all of his followers and you know, politically kill him, then get him off the ticket. Pretty ridiculous. Here is a little bit on the protests. The protests that occurred in let's take a little bit of a break and I'll come back and play that for you. But protests in Arizona in which they shut the whole dang road down. But of course they're in favor of free speech. AM Las Cruces 1450 KOBE Kelly O'Connell 523-1450. And outside right now, I've got some weather coming up right here for you. But the weather 46 degrees right here. Be right back to hear about those protests. Well, hello there. If you're just joining us, we talked a little bit about Obama in Cuba and his continual need to ingratiate himself with his enemies, which are typically more in alignment with, apparently, with his beliefs than his allies are. I mean, isn't he more in tune with Iran and Cuba, the communism and the Islam? That's what it seems like, isn't it? All right, here's a little bit on the Trump protests that shut down the highway in Arizona, where there is a big delegate pool tomorrow. There's a primary.
Donald Trump once again making big headlines this weekend as he campaigns ahead of critical contests
in Arizona and Utah this Tuesday. People protesting his rally in Fountain Hills, Arizona yesterday, doing everything in their power to stop the frontrunner from speaking, even blocking the road on the way to the event. Later, violence erupting at another rally in Tucson. Here now is Stephen Miller, senior policy advisor with the Trump campaign. Stephen, good to see you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thank you.
To what do you attribute this violence? What's your take on what we're seeing as Donald Trump campaigns over the weekend and we're seeing these people try to stop him?
Well, you've definitely seen some far left disruption. You've seen it in Chicago. You've seen it in Arizona. It's a very small, angry group of people who support open borders policies, who are anti-cop, anti-law enforcement, who support chaos and disorder. And that's really not what the American people support. It's not a mainstream view. It's not a popular view. And it just underscores, again, that you have a silent majority in this country who want to return to law and order, rule of law, a prosperous economy. And you're always going to have a group of people who are aggressively opposed to that.
Yeah, and which is why, you know, Trump choosing immigration as one of his main campaign issues really resonated with so many people. And in fact, it's one of the issues that is dividing the Republican Party. I want to talk to you about this, Stephen. I know you've done a lot of work on immigration, having worked with Jeff Sessions from Alabama and worked on the immigration reform. And you and I have spoken about this in the past, and you say this is really fundamental for any election because it is about who gets to live in America, who gets to work in America, and who gets to participate in our democracy.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And, you know, I heard you read the quote earlier from Mitt Romney, and he said on his Facebook post that this election is about Republicanism versus Trumpism. Well, of course, that's absolute nonsense. The choice that we have is between the national interest and the special interest. And what do I mean by that? Do we have an immigration policy of uncontrolled migration that saps wages, that increases unemployment, that leaves millions out of work, that strains our schools, our hospitals, our budgets? Or do we control the pace of immigration to create a rising income for the American family, to create a tighter labor market where people can get jobs, to make it easier for our schools to keep up with growing demands? That's the choice that voters face. And of course, we have large donors who tell Mitt Romney what to do, who want to keep the border open, who want to keep incomes low, but that's not what the American people want, and that's really what this election is coming down to.
All right, there you have it, the claim of the spokesman for Trump. And let me just ask you one thing. If you're supporting Trump, and I know there's a lot of supporters out there, how do you deal in your mind with the fact that in the past, and even fairly recently, he has not been a conservative? Do you think he's a convert, or do you care? Now, I stated at the start of the show, I think what people are angry about, most angry about, is not the economy. I think they're most angry at this attitude of the president, this infuriating smugness, this idea that I have the truth, you don't, I have the power, you don't, I'm going to do what I want, you're going to just eat it, and it doesn't matter how damaging it is to America. That's upsetting people on one level. On another level, they're also infuriated at their elected representatives, their senators and congressmen, who they're either not standing up against this, or they're part of the problem. They're into it. I mean, the policy is so bad. The policy of pulling border agents, defense of them, of their values, of what they believe in, of their safety. And they want common sense things that they can understand driving the public policies, the foreign policies. And they don't want to be talked down to by people that they realize are probably idiots. I mean, people look at the president and say to themselves, he either has a terrible set of values that I cannot identify with, or he's just a bad person. He's an anti-American person who should have never run for president. He should have relocated to another country. Anyway, 648 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. That's my take on why Trump is popular and why he's probably going to get the nomination on election. And now Mexico is demanding that we give citizenship to these people. This just came out a minute ago. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. All right. I think we've been ahead of a lot of stuff on this show because they're just bringing up this Glenn Beck referring to the Mormon prophecy while he's been giving a speech over the weekend last Friday. And he refers to the White Horse prophecy, which I had told you about before, but I'm going to fill you in a little bit more. Check this out. Very fascinating. And what I find probably equally interesting is that Ted Cruz seems to be buying into this stuff at some level. Two different religions, two different gods, if you talk to a theologian. And yet Ted Cruz, who wants to bring his supposedly wants to bring his religious beliefs into government, is on board with this. Check it out.
The U.S. Senate. I want to speak to you about something that may be controversial. Well, that's what I do. And it's not something that I have said while I've been out for Ted and now with Mike, but it's something that this crowd needs to hear. It's something that Utah needs to hear. The body of the priesthood is known to stand up when the Constitution hangs by a thread.
That's the prophecy that I'm talking about. It's the White Horse prophecy, and it's the claim. And I have a clip of a Mormon president from decades ago talking about the same thing. There's a belief in Mormonism that Mormons in general will stand up to defend the Constitution, which they consider to be a sacred document, the same as the Bible, and to defend it even up to the point of their blood. And it's going to be Mormons that save the United States and the Constitution.
I am a convert. Hold on. I am a convert to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in 2000. What attracted me was not only the truth of the message, but also the people like President Lee and President Benson, who knew exactly who we were, knew who we were as a country. I joined many times. What held me through was the prophecy that the Constitution will hang by a thread, and this people would remember what our founders did. It is our responsibility to stand for the Constitution. There are people of many faiths all around the country. There are many people of many faiths, good friends of mine, that are standing with the Constitution. But there are also many Christians who are failing in their duty. Constitution. The Philadelphia moment was a God moment. And we all know that. It was a God moment. George Washington is one of the most exceptional men. He was called the indispensable man for a reason. If you took George Washington out of the mix, it would have fallen apart. And he was a servant his whole life. From the time that he was 14 years old, he wanted to join the Royal Navy. Thank goodness he didn't. He didn't because his mother, he took his steamer trunk up onto the deck of the ship and he joined the Navy. And his mother was down at the bottom of the gangplank. She was a very dramatic woman. She was, oh, no, George, no, please, don't leave me. And I can imagine that the sailors were all like, dude, I can see why you want to go to the ocean. Wow. But she made a big scene. And he picked his steamer trunk up, and he went down the gangplank, and he set it down next to her, and he said these words, Mother, if this is where you require me, by your side I shall remain. He was a servant his whole life, and he gave up the things he wanted to do. He didn't want to be the general. He tried to talk them out of it. Nobody liked him. Everybody hated him. Until he crossed the Delaware, he lost everything. He had 20,000 people in the summer that were fighting under his command. By the time he got to the Delaware, he had 2,000. He didn't want the job. He wasn't quite honestly good at the job. What he was good at was listening to the Lord. Finally, when it comes to the Articles of Confederation and the Philadelphia moment. He doesn't want to go to Philadelphia. His whole life, all he wanted to be was a farmer. And so he goes back to Mount Vernon after the war is won. He certainly doesn't want to be the president of the United States. And he begins to farm his own land. And in the middle of the night on a rainy evening, a horse comes through the gates of Mount Vernon. And a man gets off the horse and raps on the front door. And a George Washington appears and opens the door. And it is a man representing the Congress. And he says, "General, we need you in Philadelphia. The Articles of Confederation are too weak. It's falling apart. We can't get anybody to come into the same room. The states won't even talk to each other anymore. And nobody wants a new constitution. We need you in Philadelphia. You're the indispensable man. You're the only man that will bring everyone together." And George Washington said something that was very unlike him. A servant his whole life. But now, at 55, he wanted his way. And he looked at the man at the front door and he said, quote, "Have I not yet done enough for my country?" And slammed the door. In my mind's eye, I see George Washington walking to the banister in the hall, putting his hand and doing the same thing that all of us.
All right. So Glenn Beck's approach to George Washington, there's some more good parts to that. I might come back. The main thing is they're calling in the White Horse Prophecy. You know, I got to come back and I'm going to play a clip from this after the break on the hour, not from this, but from the president of the Mormon Church on this. It's absolutely riveting and fascinating stuff. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. And then I'm going to get into the peril that Hillary's in, and also some of the maneuvers to stop Trump and where they're at. We'll be right back after break on the hour. Hey, it's Kelly. It's Kelly. Good morning. If you're just tuning in, we talked about earlier Obama in Cuba. Earlier, we talked about Obama in Cuba and what's going on down there, and the rallies in Arizona. It looks like Trump probably has a natural advantage in Arizona. He's got the former governor, and he's got Joe Arpaio backing him up. We have a phone call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Jerry. Good morning, Kelly.
Morning, Jerry. What's up?
Hey, earlier this morning, around 6:30, you were mentioning the people of the United States being persuaded or being led the wrong way, especially when it comes to the leadership that we currently have in the White House. That's caused by Pavlov's dog theory. And if people don't know what Pavlov's dog is, it's a guy, a scientist back some time ago, was training his dog to respond to a dinner bell. And every time he'd ring the bell, the dog would come and he would feed it. Eventually, he quit feeding the dog. That's called conditional training. And that conditional training we've been going under, or have been under, since basically the invention of the television in the United States.
Nobody ever lets me squeeze anything in. That explains TV dinners.
No, that explains things like currently
that was
we
a joke,
have
Jerry.
Commercials
joke
coming
alert,
on.
Jerry, joke alert, Jerry. Joke alert. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I got your joke, but it wasn't
not funny to you. But anyway, Jerry, get to your what would be really hilarious is if you would get to your point.
Yes. Oh, okay. anyway, that it explains why we have things like soft porn being presented on the TV currently, when we have models on there posing in underwear, where 30 years ago that wouldn't be tolerated. So anyway, the American people are being persuaded or conditioned to believe certain things like communism or socialism is good, and it's not.
All right.
Thank you, Kaylee.
Thank you, Jerry. Have a good day. All right. All right. So we've got this. All right. So just to finish up this idea with Beck and all right. So, all right. Both Glenn Beck and Cruz see themselves apparently as having and this is great. I mean, to feel like God is calling you to do something is a wonderful thing. Everybody should feel that way about what they're doing. But the Puritan idea of calling is not just, you're not just called to preach, but according to the Puritans, you're called to be a banker or a lawyer or an artist, whatever. But both Glenn Beck and Ted Cruz, almost called him Tom Cruise, appear to believe that they are part of a special revelation, part of a special a call of God. That's what it would seem to me to be like. Now, I'm going to play just a little bit of Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck, I believe, thinks he's part of this white horse.
I've been wondering what it was for. It's for this moment. Honor, courage, love. Honor, courage, love. It was for this moment because this is the audience that's going to save the Republic. I'm telling you, I am filled with the Spirit. I am filled with the truth on this one.
Did you hear that? Glenn Beck is full of the Spirit, and he's being directed by God.
This is the moment. Honor, courage, love. This is the moment. This audience will save the Republic. This is the moment. Grab your friends. Everything I have talked about for almost a decade and a half is all coming to play this summer. And that tells me that God has had a master plan the whole time. I'm not saying that we're prophets. I'm not saying that we're anointed. I'm not saying any of that. I'm saying God is involved with the Republic because these are his rights, not ours.
He is saying that he's anointed. What in the... Don't double speak there, friend. All right, here is... This guy's name is Ezra Taft Benson. Lived from 1899 to 1994. He was an American farmer, government official, and religious leader who served as the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture during both the Eisenhower administration, and also he was the 13th president of the Church of Latter-day Saints, LDS. All right. This is what this guy said about the Mormons saving America and the Constitution. This is just straight out of the horse's mouth, because don't forget, in Mormon theology, the president is also a living prophet. He's a living prophet. He's being given prophecy by God, and he can understand any language, living or dead. Check it out.
Faith that the Constitution will be saved as prophesied by Joseph Smith. But it will not be saved in Washington. It will be saved by citizens of this nation who love and cherish freedom. It will be saved by enlightened members of this church, men and women, who will subscribe to it and abide the principles of the Constitution. I revere the Constitution of the United States as a sacred document.
All right. Understand that the belief of the Mormons is that the Constitution isn't just a great or unparalleled political document. It is sacred, the same as the Bible, the same as the Book of Mormon.
To me, the words are akin to the revelations of God, for God has placed his stamp of approval on the Constitution of this land. I testify that the God of heaven sent some of his choicest spirits to lay the foundation of this government, and he has sent other choice spirits, even you who hear my words this day, to preserve it. We, the blessed beneficiaries, face difficult days in this beloved land, a land which is choice above all other lands. It may also cost us blood before we are through. It is my conviction, however, that when the Lord comes, the stars and stripes will be floating on the breeze over this people. May it be so, and may God give us the faith and the courage exhibited by those patriots who pledged their lives and fortunes that we might be free. In the name of Jesus Christ, amen.
All right, that is the outline of the White Horse Prophecy, where the Republic is in peril and is being put to the sword, or the Constitution is being trampled on, torn to pieces, whatever. And as a result of that, the Mormon Church is called in at the last minute. Called in at the last minute to save the, not just the Constitution, but to save America. This is what Glenn Beck believes is going on right now. He has been called as a Mormon to deliver America, and he is the kind of the prophet that is guiding it right now, and the means to do it is Ted Cruz. 7:15. We'll take a little break here. AM Las Cruces 1450 KOBE. 523-1450. We'll be right back. And I've got just a little bit more on this topic, and then we'll move on. All right, I'm trying to queue up this info for you so that you can understand. And Kathy had called up and said that she found it one of the most terrifying things she'd ever heard. I don't personally, and I've talked about this before, I think the proper law in this country ought to be sympathetic or representative to a large extent of Christianity, because there's so many people here that claim to be Christians. We are a democratic republic. The idea that the minority is always, you know, in charge of getting to be able to make decisions, and, you know, and right now there's a minority of people that support abortion. And I've done an article on the catastrophe abortion has brought in through economically speaking, putting aside the religious or the moral arguments. As a as an economic doctrine, it has just been a total disaster for America. All things being equal, a country that has more population is going to be stronger than another country. And you might say, well, what about India? What about China? Both of those countries developed outside of Europe. And so they did not have, you know, capitalism. They did not have constitutionalism, Bill of Rights, and all that stuff that would protect the markets. So the markets never really developed. Now, you've got both India and China developing like crazy. Well, how did they do that? Because China is a communist country. They got their model because the leader of China visited Singapore, this little tiny island nation that's a huge economic power, and he couldn't believe what was happening there. He said, can you show me your model? They showed him the model of Singapore, and he brought it back to China, implemented it. That model comes straight out of Britain. Singapore is a British colony or former British colony. So, all right. Now, here's a little bit on the idea that both, well, here, let me see which one I want to play first here. So I better, but to sum up my position, I think that if we're going to bring in law, we need to do it through the legislature. If we're going to make changes to our law that are more sympathetic to the beliefs of the vast majority of the people in this country, we need to do it properly through the legislature and not impose it on, because it sounds to me this dominionism could be no different than socialism in that they want a minority of the people in charge, a minority set of beliefs in charge, to put their opinions into law and then to, at the same time, according to one of the statements that was stated by claimed by Ted Cruz's dad, the dominionists want to take the money from the rich and give it to Christians. And what's the difference between that and socialism? So, you know, you got to be careful that what you believe is applied in the right way. Now, here's a little bit on Romney and Ted Cruz both claiming to be messiahs, or that's the claim. That's part of this white horse prophecy.
Romney versus Cruz.
And this is a guy by the name of Tom Hartman, who has a, I believe it's out of D.C., but he's a liberal talk show host.
Romney, and we did a number of programs on this back during the election of 2012, when Romney was running against Obama, how this this white horse prophecy is a big deal in the Mormon Church. It's not actually part of the Book of Mormon. It was about a speech that Joseph Smith gave in May of 1843. And, you know, it's published in the Mormons, a lot of more. It's not part of official doctrine, but it is. A number of Mormons called in the program and said, oh, yeah, they talk about this in our church on Sundays. And everybody knows about the White Horse Prophecy. And the White Horse Prophecy talks about you will go to the Rocky Mountains and you will see a great and mighty people established, which I will call the White Horse of Peace and Safety. Your enemies will follow you with persecutions and make obnoxious laws against you in Congress to destroy the White Horse. And they did. They outlawed polygamy. You will have a friend or two. And then you will see the Constitution of the United States almost destroyed. It will hang by a thread, and that thread is fine as the finest silk fiber. Now, a lot of people feel that.
All right, so getting a little too ambitious here. I tried to open up a page that was hooked up to a fascinating story that I ran into, and maybe what I'll do, see if I can just read this for you real quick while I'm waiting to reboot this thing. But there's something from Listverse, and it's 10 failed attempts to create state cults or religions. And one of them was in, I'm just going to close this page here if I can. One of the state religions was theocratic approach to you know, theocracy is leadership by God, technically. And this attempt to run a state religion coming out of Mormonism, Mormon beliefs. I mean, if it seems like I'm picking on Mormons, I really don't mean to be. It's just that I am somewhat interested and a little bit alarmed that this approach that Glenn Beck is putting forward and using his enormous popularity to bring across this idea that I think most Christians, if they were informed on what Ted Cruz believed, not, or pardon me, Glenn Beck believed, they would not agree that he's a prophet of the Lord, because it's a different religion. Now, a Mormon is going to tell you that their religion is a summary and a continuation of Christianity. But, you know, Islam makes the same claim. And I'm not saying that the LDS are Muslims, but I'm going to continue on with this statement from Hartman.
Three. And, you know, it's published in the Mormons, a lot of more. It's not part of official doctrine, but it is. A number of Mormons called in the program and said, oh, yeah, they talk about this in our church on Sundays. And everybody knows about the White Horse Prophecy. And the White Horse Prophecy talks about you will go to the Rocky Mountains and you will see a great and mighty people established, which I will call the White Horse of Peace and Safety. Your enemies will follow you with persecutions and make obnoxious laws against you in Congress to destroy the White Horse. And they did. They outlawed polygamy. But you will have a friend or two. And then you will see the Constitution of the United States almost destroyed. It will hang by a thread, and that thread is fine as the finest silk fiber. Now, a lot of people feel that we're at that point right now. The Constitution's under attack. Some, you know, from the right, some from the left. I mean, yes. And it will be preserved and saved by the efforts of the White Horse and the Red Horse, who will combine in its defense. The time will come when the banks in every nation will fail. A terrible revolution will take place in America. Excuse me. The land will be literally left without a supreme government. England and France are now bitter enemies. Keep in mind, this is 1843, but they will be allied together in order to keep Russia from conquering the world. Remember Mitt Romney saying, you know, the most existential threat to the United States is Russia? This is why. Because he thinks he's the White Horse. And then during this time, the Great White Horse will have gathered strength, sending out elders to get the honest in heart of the United States to stand by the Constitution of the United States as it was given by inspiration of the Lord. Power will be given to the White Horse to rebuke nations afar off. Now, who has that power? The president. The White Horse becomes president. Not that they will be one with the White Horse, but when the law goes forth, they will obey. Those opposing will be called Gog and Magog, the nations of the world led by the Russian Tsar, and their power will be great. All opposition will be overcome, and this land will then be the Zion of our God, the United States. So Mitt Romney thinks he's running to be basically John the Baptist, the anointed one, who is going to anoint the Messiah when he comes.
All right, so update this a little bit, because this is about a year and a half. Well, it's about 2 years old. Get rid of Romney and stick in their Cruz and Beck.
Back and save the world. Ted Cruz thinks the same thing. Here's Ted Cruz's father, Raphael. He said, for example, on August 26, 2012, he said, quote, he's talking about a previous pastor who was talking about Proverbs. He said, the pastor referred to Proverbs 13:22 a little while ago, which says that the wealth of the wicked is stored for the righteous. In other words, your wealth and my wealth, it's stored up for righteous people like the Koch brothers and Ted Cruz and his buddies. And it says that the kings anointed to take dominion, that transfer of wealth is going to occur. Here's Raphael Cruz.
It's an anointing as king. And God has given you an anointing to go to the battlefield. And what's the battlefield? The battlefield is the marketplace. To go to the marketplace and occupy the land. To go to the marketplace and take dominion. And if you recall, we talked about the fact that dominion is not just in the church. That dominion is over every area, society, education, government, economics.
Which people are going to rule America, and Ted Cruz is the guy who's going to make it all happen. That's the clip we have, right? Is there, there's another clip? Okay. The other clips, there's a few other clips out there. You can find them poking around where Ted Cruz is anointed to be this guy, the king of the Seven Hills.
All right. Now, just getting into a little bit of the symbolism of the Seven Hills, I haven't seen this explicitly stated, but the kingdom of Seven Hills is Rome. So by claiming that your dominion is of the Seven Hills, the seven areas of life in America, you are symbolically claiming to become the new Rome and superseding all that authority. So in technically, you would even be claiming to take over the power of the Catholic Church, because the Catholic Church is the Church of the Seven Hills, because there's seven hills in Rome. So anyway, here's a little bit from Ted Cruz's dad saying what he talked to him, how they talked when Cruz was a lad.
I remember, well, let me just go back to when he was maybe four.
That's going back.
When he was four, I used to read Bible stories to him all the time. And I would declare and proclaim the word of God of him. And I would just say, you know, Ted, you have been gifted above any man that I know. And God has destined you for greatness. And I started making declarations about the word of God to him every day, every day.
You can trust me. We will become so blessed that we will usher in the coming of the Messiah. This message is for you. Would you welcome our good friend Rafael Cruz? What a tremendous man of God.
This is at Ted Cruz's church. And I want you to remember that a lot of the figures in this are charismatic, meaning they believe not only do they hear from God, but God speaks through them. That's part of the charismatic movement.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Every way.
Well, praise God. What a blessing. The pastor referred to Proverbs 13:22 a little while ago, which says that the wealth of the wicked is stored for the righteous. And it is through the kings anointed to take dominion.
One of the great and most influential theologians of the last century, which would be Rusus John Rushdoony. It has had enormous impact on the religious right, and it is also, the reform movement is not charismatic. It has also been accepted by wide swaths of the charismatic movement. So we're talking about probably the most influential set of religious ideas in the last century in terms of politics, and Ted Cruz is a champion of that. And just to let you know, I am not at all opposed to many of these ideas to be set into law, because I see this country going down the tubes. You know, and when you've got somebody like Obama who is just making law off the top of his head, the Romans called lex animata, a living law, that's a total disaster. We've got to turn the ship around, but I believe that the way they're approaching this is it's very unnerving. And I think this is America. It's a democracy. We do things through persuasion. We persuade other people that we're right and to join us. We don't just make ourselves a living law. 734 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450. 523-1450. We'll be right back. And I think that we're going to, we're going to switch into Hillary, who's in a little bit of peril. All right. So there is increasing speculation that the person who's at the head of the FBI, James Comey, has come to the conclusion that Hillary has broken the law. So the question is then, what's the upshot? What's the outcome of that? And all right, so you've got from the New York Post, will Hillary get charged or what? From Charles Gasparino, FBI Chief James Comey and investigators increasingly certain presidential nominee Hillary Clinton violated laws in handling classified government info through her private email server. Some expect him to push for charges, but he does face a formidable obstacle. It's obviously it's Obama feeling that he can't really. I mean, how does Obama here's the position that Obama is in. He has got this legacy coming up of 8 years where he has, you know, he's been went into office. He's been elected and reelected. His Secretary of State was involved in some shenanigans. And so the upshot is that whether she broke the law, probably to Obama, and you might say, well, Obama's totally corrupt. What difference does it make? Well, let's just say they're sitting around and having a conversation about this. If it comes out that Hillary transparently and clearly broke the law and nothing happens to her, that harms Obama, his legacy. On the other hand, if she's indicted, that is a total disaster for the Democratic Party because she has to stand down from the election, which would mean that either Bernie Sanders moves into her slot, gets the nomination, and then gets creamed in the general because Bernie Sanders is unelectable based on what he believes. Not that he's run a bad campaign. He's run a great campaign based on what he believes. But if she stands down, then the Republicans are coming in. No matter who they choose is going to get elected, probably. Although you could have, think about this, you could have a brokered convention on both parties. You know, you could bring in Biden as the nominee for the Democrats. He's a relatively popular politician. And then you could have on the right, you could have a Paul Ryan facing a Joe Biden. So I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but you've got to understand that it really doesn't matter what Hillary's done. The only calculation in this whole thing is political. And some of the parts that are moving in this analysis are James Comey, who is, from what I understand, a Republican, but he's a fairly conservative guy and has, you know, pretty much kept his head down as the FBI leader. But now he feels like, I believe that he needs to do something, but he can't do anything because he has no prosecution power. He can't do anything outside of the Department of Justice. The Department of Justice is an extension of Obama. So no act to have Hillary indicted is going to happen, in my opinion. Could have, which would cause a lot of problems for Hillary, if James Comey stood up and said that he stands for the idea that she needs to be indicted, and if she's not, then that's a miscarriage of justice. We have a phone call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly, this is Neil. How you doing?
Hey, what's up, brother? How you doing?
Good. Hey, what do you think about this option? Hillary doesn't get indicted, but Uma and Cheryl Mills and her, you know, her staff that's around her, they get indicted because she claims she had no idea and they fed me this information. They gave me this idea, blah, blah, blah.
I like it.
Yeah, I just can't see that. Yeah, I can't see Hillary going down. I mean, I can see people around her going down, but there's no way she's going to go down, I don't think.
Well, look, Obama is driven by political concerns. He's not worried about the law per se. We've seen him many times bend the law. He's lied to support his policy. He's not worried about lying. He's not worried about the law. And I'm not saying that to inflame the Obama supporters. That's just my analysis of him. But when it comes to this, I don't see that he's a slave to the law on this.
Yeah, I agree, but his Justice Department did give immunity to Hillary's tech guy, you know, the guy who set up the server. So to me, that kind of signals something really big.
How about this, that they were told to do that so that they could gather all the information on Hillary so that they would know what the information was so it couldn't be used against her without their knowledge in the general election?
I can't argue against that. That's a possibility. But you know what? It is kind of mute, though, because if Donald Trump gets nominated, I don't think he really fares too well in the general. And if he doesn't get nominated, they give it to somebody else, even like Ted Cruz. I think he stomps off like a big baby and takes all of his supporters. I think either way, the Republicans are screwed.
Well, I mean, here's another angle on this. Donald Trump uses the same skill set he's used to dominate the GOP. He turns it on Hillary, and he begins to give her a little bit of Hansen's disease, a.k.a. leprosy. She starts getting parts of her body cut off more and more until she's just gone. Everything she stands for, Trump comes after her, starting with her husband.
Yeah, you know, there is one hope for the Republicans, I guess, and that is Hillary herself. If she's indicted or if the FBI says, yeah, we recommend an indictment, but the Justice of, Department of Justice doesn't go through with it, I think that could make her extremely weak and vulnerable.
Radioactive. Radioactive. That because, I mean, then you're saying that here's a person, because of her connections, will never be prosecuted, but we know that she's committed a felony.
Yeah, exactly. We'll see what happens. It is an exciting, exciting election year, if anything. Very
entertaining. It is so exciting. Thanks, Neil. Have a great day. Drive safe. All right, bye-bye. Let's take a little break here, and we'll come back. And we've got a little reaction from – I do have the grab bag stories for you, too, but we got to get to them first. But here is – we'll take a break and come back, and we'll get some feedback from – can you imagine this? A Frank Luntz focus group on whether Hillary's an honest person. Wow, you don't want to miss that. We'll be right back at 7:46 AM. Las Cruces, 1450 KOB,
523-1450.
All right, here's a little focus group on Hillary Clinton.
You don't trust Hillary Clinton?
Not at all.
You don't trust Donald Trump?
No. Not as much.
How could you be more qualified than Hillary Clinton?
I mean, Hillary Clinton hasn't done anything that has made her qualified. The only
United States Senator, Secretary of State.
I'm sorry to say she's a flip-flopper. That's just what it is. For me, I see character because people's stance on issues can change, as we have all seen. Character defines who you are, not what you do.
And titles aren't accomplishments.
So I'm going to play for viewers at home that clip that you reacted to, and then I want to understand why you resented it so much.
You talk about leveling with the American people. Have you always told the truth?
I've always tried to. Always. Always.
Some people are going to call that wiggle room that you just gave yourself.
Well, no,
always tried to.
No, I've
mean, you know, Jimmy
tried.
Carter said, I will never lie to you.
Well, But you know, you're asking me to say, have I ever? I don't believe I ever have.
What was wrong?
She just, you can turn off the sound and still see on her face that she was lying. She was the worst liar I think I've ever seen in my life.
She lied about lying.
For me, it comes down to literally a bottom line decision. To what length am I willing to go to keep Trump out of the White House?
I don't know. Why do I have to pit the lesser of two evils for someone to run the free world? This is supposed to be the greatest country on earth, and right now we're being forced to pick the lesser of two evils.
Yeah. All these people keep saying that there's two Donald Trumps. Well, first off, I'd like a president with one personality, but if that other personality is better, can we see that, please?
Yeah.
He already said he's a chameleon and that he'll be totally different when he takes office. Mm-hmm. So even if he changed, would we even know if that's the real Donald Trump?
All right, so people, by the way, that was a group of people that were totally opposed both to Trump and Hillary getting a reaction. Here's the thing that I totally disagree with on this, is that we've got this idea out there that we're going to find the person who's the most sincere and vote for them. I don't care about sincerity. I want someone to represent my beliefs, because that's representative government. 751 Kelly O'Connell. We'll be right back. Hey, it's Kelly. Who's this? It's Kelly. Who's this? Hey, it's Kelly. Who's this?
Hi, Kelly. Jerry. Yan. How you doing?
Back on the air, Jerry. Hold on. Folks, we have another call from Jerry. Jerry, turn down your radio, please. Thank you.
Okay. All righty. Hey, Kelly,
please,
have you
we're almost out of time.
Over,
hurry up. Hurry,
you,
hurry,
code,
hurry.
Code 18, U.S. Code 18, 738 on classified information and
your point, Jerry. Jerry, get to your point, because we're running out of time.
Well, that explains everything to everybody that don't know what's going on out there. It's 18 U.S. Code 738 will explain to everybody out there why all this is happening.
All right. Anything else?
Look it up and explain it to them.
Anything else?
No, sir. Thank you.
All right, folks. Hear the crow, the cock crowing in the background over there. All right, so here is the only way for Trump to lose is for him to withdraw. And this is from Woodward of Woodward and Bernstein.
The Trump movement may have sort of run out of time. There was so much time spent last fall attacking Donald Trump as being insufficiently conservative. And those attacks fell flat. Quite frankly, most of Donald Trump's voters don't love him because they think he's conservative. It's because they think he's strong and he's a winner. And so the time has elapsed. Attitudes about Donald Trump have really sort of calcified. And if you like Donald Trump, it's unlikely at this point that you will be persuaded to change your mind. So I think at this point, the math for anybody to stop Trump before the convention becomes very hard. He'll pick up delegates in Arizona, will move forward into a state like New York, where the last poll showed him up by over 50 points. Donald Trump, the math looks pretty good for him for the next month and a half or so. It's going to be very difficult for folks to stop him, at least from winning the Republican nomination.
You agree with that, Bob?
Yes. I mean, first of all, if you try to excavate this, you realize that the only way for Trump probably not to get the nomination is for him to withdraw. It's not going to happen. If there's one thing that Trump does, he never quits. And so he's, you know, he's got he's the heavy in this. And there's something that he's brought forth in the populace that those of us who try to understand this don't understand. And
I was going to ask you about that. I mean, you've covered a lot of campaigns, a lot of candidates. Can you put this, and I'm going to ask George the same thing, in any kind of historical perspective? You compare it to, you know, some people are saying Richard Nixon in 68 with a silent majority, George Wallace in 68. What do you compare Trump to?
You can't compare him to anything. And I think there are people out there who just kind of say, let's repot the plant. Let's give somebody else a chance. And it's not just anger or disappointment in their lives. It's the sense of, let's shake this up. And no one is shaking it up as much as Trump.
George?
Well, stylistically, Trump is in the George.
Well, who cares what George Will says? But anyway, we've got a situation now. We do have another phone call. By the way, Jerry's become the new Mike. He calls up. He doesn't have dogs barking. He has cocks crowing in the background. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Unbelievable. Yes. Can you be any more vicious or mean?
To
you
who?
You want Hillary Clinton to get leprosy so her body parts fall
off? No, no.
Am I hearing this right?
No, that was a metaphor. In leprosy, which is also known as Hansen's disease, people lose... they lose their nerve endings, and so they don't know it when they put their hand on a hot stove or something. So so their body parts start to get kind of worn away. That's what I think Trump is going to do to Hillary. He's going to go after so many issues, she's not going to have anything left to run on.
I don't think that's going to happen. I think Hillary is going to decimate the Trumper guy.
Wait a second. I don't want her to defecate. What are you talking about?
Oh, see, you. That was not so funny on Monday, Kelly. Oh, good morning to you, by the way.
Good morning.
Decimate, not defecate. Hello. Have a good day, Kelly.
Okay, thanks a lot. Have a good day. All right, folks. A little touch of Frankie in the morning. Well, I think Trump's got it. Now the question is, who's Trump? And I say, I don't care what somebody believes. I want him to represent me. Of course, I care what somebody believes, but only because it is a predictor, number one, of what they're going to do in office. And number two, you want someone who has the character to be able to survive storms and everything. But this idea that there's all of these liberal fanatics, fantastical ideas out there that you want, as long as somebody is sincere. I don't really care about Obama's sincerity. I want him sincerely to go away, you know. I still don't know exactly what the guy believes, except he's not a fan of America, obviously. He's trying to constantly change it. But the sincerity, I don't want a messiah. I want someone to show up and defend the Constitution and represent the will of the people. That's our model. That's as simple as it gets. Anyway, thanks for tuning in, Kelly O'Connell, 759 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. I hope you have a wonderful day. It was great hanging out with you for a few minutes. Ciao. See you back in 22 hours.
Yo como soy tan sencillo, pongo en claro esta probada, compa, yo no dejo el brillo para mí.